Albert Pless. I work at the Cambridge Public Health Department, and I've entitled my project or presentation, Black Men Take Care of the Community Health Challenge, Sharing the Successes of Our Model. That's kind of what I'm going to do today, share our successes and talk about the Men's Health League, because I'm excited about it, and hopefully you can share my success with it. I just want to acknowledge a few people in the room, our health officer for the health department, Claude Jacob, in the front, and my director of community health for the health department, Stacey Kings, in the back. So I just want to, so those are my two bosses. So if I'm kind of, you know, it's that. All right. So so I have no disclosures to report. So today I'm going to talk, just kind of highlight three things for you, and then part of it's just really sharing again, but, you know, hopefully I can tell a few stories as well. I talk about the health of Black men in Cambridge, historically around that. Talk about two program components, even though I'm introduced you to all four of them, but the two I'm going to share with you today particularly focus on some of the theme of this around the village aspect and how that's in communities. And also sharing success, sharing some of our lessons that we've learned. We've learned a lot in the last 4 years on this project, so I'll just share a few with you, but it's been a great experience. So I think when most people think about Cambridge, you're thinking about a couple of things, most likely. You're thinking about the universities, the kind of bookends we call them, which one's MIT or Harvard. So we just brought a lovely picture from Harvard University to share with you. And in fact, that's just my own presentation, so that's just that. We'll talk just about that. But that's just what a lot of people think about when they think about Cambridge, which is definitely a key part of Cambridge, and it influences a lot what happens in Cambridge. But this is another side of Cambridge. Cambridge is a very diverse community, has a lot of ethnicities, a lot of, you know, just a great flavor. So it's just a mural that's located in an area called the Central Square aspect of, area of Cambridge. And so this, as you see, it's kind of has just a lot of flavor, a lot of just, you know, smiling faces, but a lot of just colorful faces. So this is kind of the Cambridge that I'm going to speak a little bit in this project here as we think about Black men or men of color. So, as I said earlier, Cambridge is a very diverse community. but if you look at, and clearly it's a very kind of white community. It's, if you look at between 1980 and last year, the white population pretty much represents at least almost 75%. But if you look at also the Black and non-Hispanic population, it's pretty stayed steady over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years. A growing population here is the Asian population. So, but just wanted to give you just a quick snapshot of just Cambridge, and even though it's diverse, but clearly it's a white community, and I think that speaks a lot to kind of what we've done over the last 4 years, engaging men, particularly Black men, in this effort. So, so a little bit about Black. So, there was a lot of work being done in Cambridge around Black men's health before our project came along. So I want to acknowledge a few efforts that we're doing. The Men of Color Task Force, which is a group of men who formed back in 1991 to really look at addressing health of Black men in Cambridge, and they birthed a project called the Men of Color Health Initiative. And so that kind of was a lot of the work being done. They didn't have any resources. They kind of began just to kind of say, Black men are not healthy in Cambridge. We need to do something. So they began to kind of come together and work on that. So, you know, you kind of fast forward to 2007, a report was done based upon some data that was collected on men of color. And this report is entitled the Report on Gender, Racial, and Ethnic Health Disparities in Cambridge. It was birthed in 2008. And so I'll just highlight a couple of things about this, once again, just to give you a little bit of disparities that exist among Black men and other males in Cambridge. So the first one is based upon kind of full-time employment earnings. The average annual full-time earnings of white males is 56% higher than that of Black males and 83% higher than that of Hispanic males. Probably numbers that are not much different in some other communities, some other cities. But the second one speaks a little bit, once again, to more of the health aspect. Black males have a death rate that is 9% higher than that of white males and 78% higher than Hispanic males and 327% higher than the Asian males. So once again, numbers that are probably not much different than what we see out there, but just giving you the context of the work that we're doing. So this report kind of birthed a lot of the work that's coming after that. So was a snapshot, just once again give you a snapshot of the fact that in Cambridge, as you see, you know, black males are dying earlier, dying at a higher rate than white males, and that kind of compared to the state levels as well. So once again, numbers that are probably not much different, but setting the context for you for the work that we're doing. And our work, once again, is primarily on heart disease, stroke, and diabetes with men of color. That's our focus. So all this work was being done over the years, and it got to a place where we developed a project. The initial name of this project was called Community Health Connections. It's probably a word I left out of there. And it was a long word, and also was a word that we weren't quite sure if it was going to work with men of color, or even, in essence, Cambridge men. So we began to and focus tested this work. In fact, everything we did in the early days was we focus tested. We got men together from different ethnic groups, and we talked about what would be a name that would work, what would be ways that we could engage men in Cambridge. And so we kind of grappled with some things. We came up with a word, the name of the Men's Health League, focus tested it. Men liked it. I wouldn't say loved it, but they liked it, and then they began to like it more, you know, so it became familiar because, you know, they embraced it because we kind of sold it as men competition, you know, a league, men get out there and kind of, you know, compete with one another, and so we kind of built that. But the tagline is a key thing, and I'm going to reference that a lot throughout the presentation, the Community Health Partnership for Men. This is clearly a community-based project. It's clearly drawing on, you know, the community stakeholders, and also it's a partnership. We had some formal partners, who I'll speak to a little bit in a minute, but the partners we developed over the years have been instrumental in growing the project, and so that's, I'll speak to a little bit of that later, but that tagline, I think, captures a lot of what we've done. So this is actually a man at a workout facility, and we actually, this is a cover of a replication manual that I'll speak to a little bit later, too. We created a manual of soups and nuts, how do you run a men's health program, so we put that on our website. So we run four programs, and these are just three of the brochures for three of our programs. So I'm going to focus on two of these, but I'm going to introduce you to all of them. And one thing about these brochures is important to know is that as we focus tested our work, we came loud and clear, the men said to us, you need to have men on your brochures that look like the men you're trying to get. You know, and so you got to put them on there. You got to make them look like someone wants to come. You know, and so what does that mean? You know, so we had to, you know, figure out what we had in terms of pictures, because we didn't have pictures in the early days. So we had to figure out how to get some pictures and stuff like that. So we found some pictures, and some was a couple of stock photos, but we had to really find some stuff to really capture men. So the man on the far right is a Cambridge man at a gym with a basketball. The other two guys are not, but they actually, we felt they were inviting to draw men in. So the program are Navigated Care to you from your left. Navigated Care, Fit for Life, Fitness Brothers, and I talk about those in a little bit. But just want to introduce you to our brochures, and this is how we, in the early days, draw men in. So just want to give you just a few numbers slides. So over the last, you know, 3.5 years of the project, we reached 363 men. If you look at these numbers, these were kind of targeted numbers. We had received the grant, let's go back up a little bit. We received the grant back in 2007 from the Office of Minority Health. It was a grant that allowed us to look at heart disease, stroke, and diabetes with men of color. It was a partnership that we established with the Cambridge Health Alliance, the Margaret Fuller Neighborhood House, which is a small settlement house in Cambridge, and the Cambridge YMCA. Those were the original partners of this particular project. And we had an advisory group, the Men of Color Task Force. So these were numbers that were targeted numbers that we referenced in the application that we tried to meet. And so these were close in terms of each one of these areas. But as you see, this number, based on, you know, this is a significant number for Cambridge, because they're not a lot of, you know, it's very difficult to reach men in general for our health, and to reach this many men of color. And you'll see from the next slides, you know, the number of men of color, and particularly black men, that we reached around this project. So we're excited about that number, because numbers do make a difference, actually, things like this. Just want to give you a few slides. The average age was 30 to 45, and that was average 45 as a targeted number again. But as you saw, we reached a lot of men between 46 and 59, and even a younger population of men who jumped on board around really being competitive around this work, in this project. Predominantly English speaking, but as you see, it's a very diverse community, so we engaged a lot of other men. There's a large Haitian population in Cambridge, a growing Spanish population, but once again, a lot of the men were primarily English speaking. But the next slide shows you the number of African American men that we engaged. But as you see, once again, a very diverse community of men in Cambridge. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Navigated Care Project. We're really excited about this. Is a lot of people have heard of patient navigation. That's a term that's thrown out there a lot of times. But this is our version of that. It's called Navigated Care. And just to kind of let you know a little bit of context, in all this stuff we did, we kind of, once again, we focus tested, but we weren't sure exactly how it was all coming together. So we really had to, do a lot of just, talking to men and talking to our community stakeholders, just really see what would work in a project like this. So the Navigated Care Project is simply healthcare access, engaging men in the healthcare system, helping them to be proactive within that system. What we do is we do outreach into the community. We have a patient navigator who goes out in the community and really kind of builds relationships with community partners to really get them to engage their men around accessing health insurance. It's mandated in Massachusetts, as you all know. But it is mandated in Massachusetts to have health insurance. But a lot of men don't understand that process, and they're really intimidated by it. So a patient navigator makes that process a little more smoother by talking about it with them and really kind of getting a sense of what some of their fears and challenges are. So it's really a one-on-one approach with that. But as you know, in general, it helps reduce barriers to care. If a man or anyone understands the process and is comfortable with the process, he will access that system more proactively. He would not use the emergency room as his primary care doctor. He would engage his primary care doctor. So one of the things we do really well in this project is we engage the primary care physicians within the Cambridge Health Alliance, which is a large healthcare system which has 3 hospitals and 25 health centers, ambulatory sites. And we engage those physicians in a proactive way, so they actually are on board. So when we refer a patient to the physician, more likely that we have a personal relationship with that physician. We know them, and so they're able to really break down some of the barriers around what that first visit's like. As you probably all can know, your first visit to anything is probably going to be your lasting visit. So we make that first visit, a comfortable visit by talking with the man about what some of the things he can expect to have in that first visit, and what some of the things you can expect to have in terms of building this relationship with this primary care physician. We communicate with our patient navigator communicates with the physicians through electronic medical records. So basically, he's able to understand what the appointments are and understand what the notes that the physician put in there. So he can really be able to do good follow up with the particular with the man. So it's really a key way. It's a lot of ways. It's the way now doctors communicate. Even though they may pick up the phone, they may kick an email, but electronic medical records, that's the way that they really like to communicate with the folks that are working with their patients. And another big thing we do is we link them to our Men's Health League programs. We don't want to assume that the man is just coming in, he wants health insurance, and doc, we really ask him on an intake form, are you exercising? How is your food intake? So making sure that we really address those things early and linking them to our programs. Our exercise programs, which I'll speak a little bit to one of them in depth a little bit later, but all of them, the other one as well.
Yeah, we're getting real close. Just want you to know.
Okay. So I'm going to zoom through. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, but it's like 10 to 10.
Okay. So I'm going to zoom through. Thanks, Dr. Machine. So just to zoom through a few slides, and I think just to give you a sense of, we did pre-post test on all the men, and simply this first question, and if you look at it, I don't need to see a doctor unless I've hurt myself or I'm really sick, once again. And just a quick show of hands, how many people in here know a man in their life that has not seen a doctor on a regular basis? Raise your hand. And regular basis means at least once a year. Okay. All right. So this question, the first one, I don't need to see my doctor unless I'm hurt myself or I'm really sick, probably can resonate with you as you think about the many in your life. And so before the program, 34% of the men answered that question that they agreed with, that they didn't see a doctor unless they hurt themselves or are really sick. Pretty sad percentage. But after the program, it reduced down to 8. And so that 8% really, I think we felt, contributed a lot to the fact they're comfortable with really being, say, you know what, I'm going to go in a preventative way. Okay? So I'm not going to go through all these for time purposes. I want to get to a couple of things. But if you can just see, once again, we asked them questions on attitude, how comfortable they feel talking to their doctor. I know enough about my health to ask my doctor questions about my health. And so, once again, just our goal was to move the needle in all this work. Behavior, has a primary care physician. Once again, you see a lot of them didn't have it coming in, 18%. Our goal, and that was our really primary goal, you're gonna have a provider. You know, we have a relationship with providers. We're going to get you a provider. Let's talk about that. Health insurance, once again, even though it's mandated, 35% of them, only 30% had it. So coming in, really helping to understand how to get health insurance, blood pressure, those things, how to take an exam, something, how to particular exam. Those things were important, so having that conversation with them. And some satisfaction questions as well. So I'm zooming through some stuff. A lot of quotes, a lot of stuff we got from men. But, you know, I wanted to just circle one. I got a doc I like. I got a doc I like. If you got a doc you like, it's light speed. You're going through. If you don't like your doc, and I think Dr. Smith earlier, she was someone that gave you the pediatrics. I mean, if you like your doc, it's going to go a long way. Our men's health team, a grassroots leadership program. These are a group of men who really are key agents in the community, bring other men into the community, into the programs. This is a snapshot. There's a few men sprinkled in there who are not men's health team, but this is pretty much the 80% of them at a cooking demonstration that we do. We do a lot of things like that in the community to get men engaged and moving through. We ask them some behavior questions around, on average, how many times a week do you exercise as a men's health team member? 50%, 1 to 2 times, you know, so that wasn't bad, you know, but if you see, they've increased it 3 to 4 more times after the program. So once again, even them, and they're our examples, they're our mentors. We want them to be out there and be the example that other men see. So moving the needle again. The 6 checkups, key. Even though the percentage 36% is not bad, we're moving the needle in terms of having these men understand what the 6 checkups are, so you can actually go out and help the other men understand what those are so they can be more proactive in their health. A lot of quotes again, you know, and so as you see, there's some really good ones there, but this is Albert's favorite. It changed to improve my health and share my experience with others. You know, changing their own health, improving their own health as examples, and then going out and sharing that message. These are men we're talking about. These are men of color who a lot of times this is really not something that may not feel comfortable doing. These are some great community events that we've done. We do a citywide tournament at Hoops and Health, engaging, you know, men and using basketball. We have a health education component to it. We do cooking demonstrations. We partner with the American Heart Association to do an event, 2 of them, one called Power Sunday around stroke awareness. The other one was around a barbershop thing around stroke awareness as well. Really using the barbershops as a great tool to get information to men. It seems simple. Sometimes it's the best thing to do, simple. We do an annual breakfast, really helping to bring the community of men together to really talk and support one another. Our speaker a couple of years ago was Professor Charles Ogletree, Harvard University, who really brought a great message around community involvement and really helping to support men. So great stuff. And these are some pictures. There's a man in the top right getting some information about stroke. There's a basketball tournament on the left-hand side. We do a lot of screenings of blood pressure and cholesterol and blood sugar. Some lessons we've learned. If you build a volunteer leadership group, the men's health team, it's hard, but it's worthwhile. I mean, you really invest in men, invest in their leadership. You can go out and do this in the community. You can do this. You have the skills. We give them trainings We get them training once a month around health education topics and really help them around mentorship and things like that. Invest time in community stakeholders. You know, you have to really listen to what the community says and invest time in them. Sometimes it's challenging because they may say things that, you know, like, whoa, where'd that come from? But you got to listen to them and try to really incorporate things in your project that they say. And finally, be flexible in how you engage MedX in the healthcare system. You know, it's not just about saying, hey, is a flyer put on the wall, hey, go see a doctor. You got to go out. Our patient advocate is always a community. He's always out actively engaging. In the past, the relationship we just established was with probation officers, really helping them as their clients or work with their clients, engaging them, working with men coming out of incarceration. Those are key areas, really engaging these men, not assuming that they know about it because they maybe had a health insurance while they're in prison, but really helping them think about it when they get out. Acknowledgements, the Office of Minority Health was a key in terms of the grant that we received. It birthed all our work. The Health Department, the Margaret Fuller Neighborhood House, the Settlement House, the YMCA, an instrument in our exercise. The Institute of Community Health, which is our evaluator. If I had to add one more thing onto lessons, invest in evaluation. It's expensive, but if you invest in it, you can do amazing things. Dissemination, you can really. So we invested early on, and it's paid off in terms of really how we're able to really show our work. And to all our participants, I mean, these men have been amazing and engaging in our work. So that's my project.
That's fantastic. I assume we have your report at the Office of Minority Health.
Yes.
Okay. All right, good.
I'm sorry, I don't have any questions. I may have cards too, but anyone have any just quick questions I can try to know? Yes.
I'm wondering if you think one of the reasons the program was so successful is because the volunteer team that you had was mostly black men or men of color.
Yes.
And also, if so, how were you able to recruit those? You said it was challenging. How were you able to recruit so many men of color to volunteer to be a part of this program?
Yeah. Well, I agree. It is about having the men that look like the men you want to use. I mean, it's not easy getting those men. So in terms of recruiting those men, we use our community partners. I mean, some of this stuff it seems simple, and it's what we did. We engage our community partners. We find out, okay, so do you have men that are in your circles that really do think want to be a part of a project like this? We got some of the stakeholders from the Men of Color Task Force. They were key members in early on. And so, when we're really developing some of these things, we're just now, in fact, today, and we're getting the first draft of our Men's Health Team curriculum. We have some interns from Hope University working on that curriculum. So. It's really about it in finding community partners that really can find the men that work best for you.
I have a couple of questions for you. In terms of the curriculum you just mentioned, as well as the materials you mentioned earlier, was that staff that provided input on that, or did men who were recipients of the services give you input on your materials that you develop, or look at them before you finalize
all of it? In fact,
okay.
What I'm saying is that, like, for example, the focus group with a group of men, so team members was literally a few days ago that had them take up these, because some men are not continuing with it, so starting the new year in January. And so, but they clearly saw the curriculum and had buy into it. In fact, I think two pages came out of it. It wasn't really going to work. You know, if you're talking about nutrition, that's really not going to work. Can't do it that way. So clearly, not just staff, but just collaborative effort, which again is frustrating sometimes. Being like, it's got to be done this way. We have a project. We got to get this to a binder. We got to get it, you know, out the door. But you got to slow down with it. So we had to slow down.
That's good. One other question about your outcomes. Did you kind of tease out how much of the difference you achieved was related to just having health insurance because they didn't have it before versus, you know, your other activities? Did you have a good sense of how much having health insurance made a difference?
Difference in them actually being overall healthy?
Not in them keeping, you know, regular appointments and going to the doctor and so forth.
Oh, I think it was more attributed to the fact that they were engaged by the patient advocate. I think in terms of feeling comfortable with the process,
You know, I mean, so I think that was probably more so than, I mean, health insurance allowed them to access care, but I think even with that card, that MassHealth card, they weren't going to go do the things they need to do without feeling comfortable going to the doctor.
Anyone else have a question?
So is it a program where men actually, do they graduate out, or is there a plan to keep them engaged,
right,
you know, in perpetuity?
So both, and so each program has a cycle window. So the Fitness Brothers program has a 10-week window, so they finish, they do a post-test. We truly try to engage them with, continue with us in other ways. We have bike rides, we have walks and things like that to continue keeping them going. The Fit for Life program, which I didn't really quite introduce here, is another intervention focused on targeted for men who are high risk for heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. That's a 12-week initiative. And once again, same thing, they finish in 12 weeks, and we try to continue to get them engaged.
And just real quickly, one of the slides you showed about the racial ethnic breakdown and some of the health disparities,
yeah.
The black men and white men seem to be closer together than Hispanic and Asian. And is there any, like, what's happened? I've not seen a slide like that.
Yeah, I don't know, Claude. I don't know if you want to speak a little bit to that at all. I don't know.
That goes back to the study we did back in 07. I just know that the diversity of Cambridge, the highest minority group of them are Chinese. It's Chinese immigrants and then it's African Americans. And so for what we had as a sample size, we've seen that, at least in Cambridge, it might not reflect the general population, but still we're showing the relative disparities between African Americans and Latino. We don't have a high Latino population in Cambridge.
Because, I mean, the percentage, like, you know, it's like, blacks, you know, I mean, though the income was one thing, but it was 9% greater than whites, like 300 something. Like, I mean, it was one of those, like, are blacks and whites just dying? Like, but the sample size is small. That's what I'm saying.
So I think we have to wrap up, but just in closing, if you were at, I would encourage you, all of you, that if you're doing something similar to this as addressing healthcare issues and healthcare insurance and access, keep in mind that there are a number of initiatives and funding coming out of the Affordable Care Act, and it may be other ways in which you can get funding for your activity. So just kind of pay attention to that. Healthcare.gov, always a place you can go to find out more about that. Thank you for coming.